to me all the time in reducing stress and suffering in my life. The universal nature of the Buddha's teachings. One of the great analogies that the Buddha said is that he was pretty gifted in analogies, and he talked about how if you put a cup full of salt and a gallon of water, the gallon of water will become undrinkable, become too salty. But if you put the same cup of salt into an entire reservoir, like the Central Park Reservoir, it's not going to affect the water. It'll be drinkable because this disturbance is so engulfed by the size of the reservoir is not affected by it. But if it's a very small body of water, like a gallon of water, then a cup of salt can ruin it. This is, of course, an analogy about the suffering in our lives, that if our minds are very small, to use the old analogy, if our mind is the size of this bowl, then this thought makes a lot of distraction and noise. But if the mind is the size of this room, then this thought doesn't make very much noise whatsoever. So it's a matter of how do we make the mind larger than the thoughts. The Buddha said, via this process called tamayata, the mind has this tendency to abandon awareness of what's going on in the present. It's known as dissociation. It tends to abandon awareness of the body, abandon the awareness of the breath, how we're feeling, and it tends to shrink around our troubles. Whatever our challenges are, whatever's going on in our life, oh my God, I've got to deal with this and this and this. We have this running story of how much we've had to deal with, all the things that have, you know, that are going wrong, to-do list that's constantly tempting the mind to shrink around it and then be whisked away from present awareness. So that's one of the ways, of course, that we fight this tendency to have the mind shrink via tamayata, is to maintain awareness of how the breath feels, how the body feels, where tension manifests itself in our gut sensations. We become aware of other things, other sensations besides the thought. And that opens up the mind. But there's another strategy that the Buddha used as well to keep the mind very expansive and keep it from falling and collapsing around our troubles and our dramas and our worries and our to-do lists. And this was reflecting on the universal nature of everything that we experience. The Buddha's first noble truth is founded on the teaching that in life, and by which he means in life, he means everybody's life, all beings' life, every being experiences old age, sickness, death. That's where he started. Then he kept going. All beings experience the frustrations of having things turn out ways we don't want them to. All beings experience loss and separation from that which is loved. You should see my cats if I don't, we don't feed them when they want. All beings experience separation from what is loved and being with something they don't love, being around things that cause us distress. All humans experience rejection. We all experience people not appreciating us. This is a really, really important thing to reflect on. What the Buddha asked his monks to chant every single day was the chant, I am of the nature to grow old, to become sick, to die, to be separated from everything and everyone I love, and to wind up only with the results of my actions. That's the only thing at the end of life we can cling to, is the results of the way we've used our mind. That's at the end what we're going to be with. Everything else can be easily taken away. We'll lose our beauty, our health. Nothing is guaranteed. And in life, besides these bigger issues, there's just the minor things, the frustrations of people, these what the Buddha called the first arrows of people saying things we don't like and acting in ways we find unskillful. Nobody has ever lived in a time or around people that haven't acted unskillfully. Since the dawn of time, the world has been a place where there's been a lot of shitty things going on. We don't live in a particularly dangerous or unskillful time. So, reflecting on this is an extremely powerful tool for a number of ways, or a number of reasons. The first is that once we come into this wisdom of the universalness of our experience, it's easier to stay present. Because the thing that makes our dramas so compelling and so sticky and so alluring is the idea that it's mine. That I'm the one who's going through this alone. That I'm the one who's like has to work with schmucks or whatever. I'm the one that has a roommate that leaves her towels on the floor. I'm the one who's got a mother who doesn't accept me. Or I'm the one. And of course, when we hear this, somebody else say this, we realize, well, of course. There are millions upon millions, tens of millions of people that are experiencing all of this in slight variations, but the variations don't matter. They're all experiencing rejection, frustration, not getting what we want. This opening up mirrors the way the Buddha attained enlightenment. On the first night of his enlightenment journey, he became aware of how stress and suffering arose throughout his life. He saw the cause and he saw the stress and suffering throughout the entirety of his life. But on the second night of his journey, he saw how this played out in everybody's life. It wasn't just him. Throughout all of eternity, the eternity of human beings on this planet, we've all been born with minds that are over-anxious, that are constantly fearing and worrying and trying to figure out things they can't figure out. That throughout time, of human time, there's been stress and suffering, and all beings, north, south, as he put it, east, west, above and below, outwards into limitless space, all beings experience suffering. It doesn't happen all the time. That's not the Buddha's teaching. Some people mistake the first noble truth as life is suffering. The Buddha would never say that because that's dumb. What he did say is, in life, there is some suffering. And if you argue it with that, you've been really, you've had a wonderful life. I don't know what to say because most of us experience that in life, there is mental agitation. There's difficult times where the mind won't settle down, where we're bent out of shape, where we're resisting what's happening around us and taking it all personally, and this is causing suffering. Now, the second big reason why we want to reflect on this is because when we realize that everything we're going through, other people are going through, we don't feel alone. Well, this is a bit of a duh moment, but that's really important because the motivating thing behind almost all anxiety and addiction is this conviction that nobody can understand what I'm experiencing. That you can't understand the fact that I'm scared. You can't understand the fact that I'm confused. You can't understand the fact that I don't know what the fuck's going on right now. Or you can't understand the fact that I feel everybody's out to get me. Or whatever variation of suffering we have, it's all a variation of what millions upon millions of other beings are experiencing at this very same moment, not to mention the hundreds of millions that have experienced it over time, if not billions. So, in nothing are we alone. This brings up one of my favorite stories. In the 12-step arena, one of the most wonderful, revered speakers is a guy named Earl H., who also happens to be a Buddhist. And Earl H. is what's known in 12-step rooms as a circuit speaker, which means he goes around hundreds of meetings. It's generally big in California. They like to have professionals in their 12-step meeting. So they bring Earl around, and he speaks at hundreds of meetings every year. And basically, his story is very interesting. He, as a very young man, he had an inoperable, what they thought, brain tumor, and they tried a very novel approach of chemotherapy, which worked. There was almost, they thought, no chance of him surviving, and he survived this a very experimental treatment. And his family was so thrilled that they booked a vacation in Mexico. And as they were flying there, the plane crashed, killing every single member on board the plane but Earl, who wound up hanging upside down, 20 bones in his body broken, next to the bodies of his mother, his father, and his sister for 2 days, while the plane was ransacked by bandits who stole all the possessions and left him for dead. Eventually, the authorities found the plane, which was in the mountains, and thinking that Earl was dead, put him in the back of a truck with the bodies of his parents and sister, and drove him leisurely to a town where a person examining the bodies discovered that Earl was still alive. They brought him to a hospital, and 6 months later, after numerous surgeries, he was returned, and you could understand the fact that he was somewhat nihilistic after this experience. So Earl tried to do everything he, and I say Earl because I've actually met him, he tried to drink himself to death and use drugs to death, and nothing worked. Then eventually he got sober, and he spent the last 25 years of his life not only going and helping literally tens of thousands of people become sober, but on top of that, he's also somewhat well known for being the guy who got some very famous actors who were seemingly incapable of getting sober. He's gotten them sober. I won't name them because I like to keep a shred of anonymity to this, but you can probably guess he's well known for his role in Iron Man. So anyway, not that you have any clue who I'm talking about. So Earl's been spending years and years going around telling this story and, you know, inspiring people that he, too, managed to become sober. You can do it. But he still, deep inside, had this feeling that so much of this experience of being in this plane crash and losing everyone that mattered and, you know, being left for dead was something that he would have to live with alone, and that there was no way he'd ever be able to wrap his mind around it. One night, he's speaking at a meeting, and right as the guy announces it's Earl H. going to speak, a woman screams and comes running to the front of the meeting and starts hugging him and weeping hysterically and can't get words out. Finally, Earl, who's a very funny man, says some words that make her laugh. And she's able to explain that she, too, was in a plane crash where every member of her family was killed. She was the only one who survived and was left for dead. So, he managed to find somebody else who literally had the exact same experience. Ever since then, when I'm going through an experience in life, I ask myself, is this as unique as being in a plane crash, experiencing every member of my family dying, having federales ransacked and being left for dead? And if it doesn't meet that criteria, I now assume that there's other people who are at the exact same moment experiencing the same frustration. I had to remind myself, it's amazing what will trip my mind. I was stuck inside today waiting for a delivery, and I really wanted to be outside, and a long time was passing. I was growing more and more frustrated, and then I really felt, why is this happening to me? And then I thought, oh, I thought of Earl's story, and I was like, oh my God. As if. You know, I mean, like, I'm the only person stuck inside ever on a sunny day. Like, this is happening to me? Really? Really? This is happening to me. Oh, poor me. You know, stuck inside on one sunny day. What, you know, that makes me the most unique human being that's ever lived. But my mind will go there unless I constantly bring the reflection in. I have to constantly counter this taking it all personally. When somebody acts unskillfully, I want to believe they're doing it to me. My mind doesn't want to remember, no, they're walking around being a jerk to other people too. I tend to believe I'm the only one right now that's experiencing some person getting in my way, being a nuisance, demanding stuff of me. So this is an incredibly important reflection. If I'm lonely, I'm not the only one lonely. If I'm frustrated, I'm not the only one frustrated. It's easier to see mistakes when we realize that everybody makes fucking mistakes. And everybody makes the same mistakes. We all get frustrated. We all act unskillfully in a myriad of ways. But it's all variations on the same thing. Body stress builds up in the body, and we take it out on somebody that's around us. And then they feel like a victim and that they're going through it alone. So the moment we reflect and we take an inventory of how have I been causing stress and suffering in my life, the first thing we do is we remember that everybody has done the same thing. And therefore, we don't have to beat up on ourselves. We simply see, oh, okay, this action, I don't own it. I'm not the only person that has pettily done something that I'm ashamed of. It's important to not get caught up in the taking it all personally and simply to move directly to the, oh, okay, this action wasn't skillful. I don't feel good about it. I'm not going to do it again, and I'm going to move on. That's the length that we need to get better in life. We don't need to take it personally, turn it into a story, call ourselves names, turn ourselves into whatever, kleptomaniacs or whatever tendency we have. We don't have to turn it into a conviction. We simply say, oh, wow, if I steal something, I really don't feel like good about myself in the long run. Maybe I'm going to look at this action. And that's the way we work. We gain confidence in knowing there's a way out when we reflect that there are so many people going through this exact same thing. Even if we can't figure out right now how to get a hold of them, right? I have a friend his wife and him just had a baby, and he actually doesn't know that many other parents. I assured him there were other people with newborns. And when he was assured of that, you could see the weight lifting off of him. Oh, you mean there's other people who are struggling with a crying baby all the time, too? Really? But the mind can forget this and immediately say, ah, this fucking baby, I'm alone with this fucking baby. Nobody else has got a fucking baby that's crying right now. That's what our minds will do. It latches on to the things of life, and it turns it into, it latches onto these details. And the more it latches onto the details, the more it tricks itself into believing that it's alone. Here's another funny story. I was standing with a group of people, and they were all taking turns talking about the car accidents that they were in and sharing about the experience. And one person, I've never been in an awful car accident, but I shared about the experience of my parents who were in one, and just, you know, sympathized and talked about other experiences. And one person didn't say anything. And at the end, I asked, why didn't you share anything? He's like, oh, I've never been in a car accident. And he's like, yeah, I should, I was just hoping that somebody would talk about boat accidents because I was in a boat accident. I was like, really? Really? The fact that they were talking about car accidents didn't give you permission to talk about the boat accident that you were in. It had to be a car, right? He was like, yeah. Well, I thought that they would think that that was... What? He was like, this is how fiercely we grab onto unique. You know? And if he had been in a car accident, he still probably wouldn't have shared, because it probably wasn't a red car, right? Or a new car, or a European car. That's what the mind does. I'm the only person that's got a roommate that's a pain in the neck. I can't believe I'm going through this. So we have to fight this tendency. Finally, so it becomes easier finally to forgive. Because even if we can't, even if there's somebody who's really been a schmuck in our lives and we really can't accept that there's something we've done that's similar to what they're doing, we can at least begin to open up our minds to the fact that other people besides this person are acting in the exact same way. It's just human ignorance. It's not this one person who's owning and just for us, creating a new form of torture that they're subjecting us to. If we reflect on the fact that there are other people acting just as, unskillfully in the exact same way to other people, then we're not alone, and we can realize, you know what? What I'm experiencing is not about me. And then once we do that, we can open up to remember some of the things that we've done that is slightly unskillful and begin to forgive ourselves and forgive them. And that really makes the mind open up, because it's the resentments more than anything else that crowd up the mind and take up space and make and add weight that we have to carry around. So I was going to talk about more, but I think that's enough for tonight. I think that reflection is enough to work with, and I hope that you got something from listening. I thank you for being here, and now is your chance to share anything that's going on. Yes, Josh?
Just as